61. Have a seat, Your Majesty. So this particular Kapitel Samach Aleph, Kapitel 61, was composed, according to most Meforshim, when David HaMelech went to fight Aram. Now, even though it was only one Kapitel ago, there have been a Yomtif and a number of weeks in between, but we did see in Kapitel Samach, where David HaMelech was praising the Sanhedrin, that once David HaMelech realized the Beis HaMikdash would indeed go ahead and be built, he felt that it was necessary to institute a number of wars against neighboring countries in order to sort of forcibly instill a peace on the area. The neighboring countries were all very, easily provoked, or even not provoked, but easily interested, if you will, in attacking Israel. And David HaMelech felt it was necessary to impose this peace. He went and he asked permission of the Sanhedrin, because we also mentioned, I think, previously in Shiurim, that in order to fight a defensive war when one is attacked, one does not need the permission of the Sanhedrin. In order to fight what's called the Milchamas Rishus, or an offensive or an optional war, one needs the permission of the Sanhedrin. But David HaMelech had to go to the Sanhedrin and present his reasons and his plans and say, because of this, I feel that we should attack various countries for this and this reason. Sanhedrin gave him permission. And one of the last countries he battled in this way was Aram. And David HaMelech was off fighting Aram, and he was far away from his capital and his home in Jerusalem. Now, we've also mentioned before that Chazal tell us that David HaMelech wrote Pitalach for the individual, and he also wrote them for Klal Yisrael. The Radak adds that the loneliness and the exile that David feels while he's off fighting wars, David HaMelech also sees that Klal Yisrael themselves will be in such a situation and will feel the pains of loneliness and isolation, and therefore that this kapitel also reflects David HaMelech's tefillos not only on behalf of himself, but on behalf of Klal Yisrael. There is another opinion in the Meforshim, sort of a minority opinion, that the loneliness and exile that David HaMelech is referring to is he is actually still in Yerushalayim, but because of some matters of state, the army had to go off and fight without him. And therefore he feels responsible and disconnected from the army that he sent out to battle. He feels personally responsible that he sent them out to a battle, yet they're far away. He has no instant communications to know what's happening. And he feels cut off from the army that he sent out to battle, even though he still physically is in Yerushalayim. But most of the Meforshim say he's physically with the army, and it's actually a physical separation and isolation, not just a mental and spiritual isolation. But either way, we'll see that that is the theme that David HaMelech is going to discuss, and he's going to have a very specific tefillah, very specific request that he's going to ask Hashem for in this particular kapitel. Sometimes he asks Hashem for grandiose things. We're going to say that not every tefillah has to be for something grandiose. In Pasuk Aleph, in the first verse, it says, Lamanat Seach al Neginas L'David, for the conductor with music on the Neginas. Now we've had before Lamanat Seach L'Neginos, and we said that Neginos was an instrument. We don't know exactly what kind of instrument. It was a stringed instrument, but we don't know exactly what it was. Just to catch you up, we're saying that David HaMelech wrote this particular kapitel when the army was off fighting Aram, which he had received permission from the Sanhedrin to fight in order to subdue all the neighboring countries in preparation for the Beis HaMikdash. And David HaMelech is feeling isolated and cut off, either because he's way out in the field with the army, or according to some of Meforshim, because he is still in Yerushalayim, but he's cut off from the men he sent out to fight, and that he also is projecting this onto the loneliness and isolation that Klal Yisrael will feel in their future galus. So now, we've said before that there is an instrument called a neginos, although we don't know exactly what it looks like. It's a stringed instrument. Here we have something called al-neginas. The word neginas appears exactly one time in Tehillim, and it's right here. And usually, al-neginas is sort of an unusual construction, like it's a compound upon the neginas. So the Meiri does say that really it's the same instrument. It's neginos elsewhere, but even though this is an unusual Hebrew construct, he doesn't really explain why it's so unusual, but it's really the same neginos that we saw somewhere else. Whatever that stringed instrument is, it's the same stringed instrument here. The Medrash, on a little bit deeper level, says, so why then is it neginos everywhere else, and al neginas here, upon the neginas here? So the Medrash says something very interesting. It says, David HaMelech is writing a netzach, laminat seyach. Netzach means eternal. So the David HaMelech is way off fighting in Aram. Far away not only from Yerushalayim and from the center of temporal matters, but from the center of spiritual matters, and he's far off even from the land of Israel. Yet he still can feel inspired enough to write Tehillim. So says the Medrash, that's why it says Al Neginas. Even on the Neginas, I can still write L'David. So the simple meaning is that it's a Neginos. Here it's slightly worded differently. The Medrash brings a little bit deeper meaning that he can still feel the Neginos even off in exile. Goes on to say in the next pasuk, Shema Elokim, hear me, Hashem, Rinasi Hakshiva Tefilasi, and attend unto my prayer. Now, what does it mean to hear me and to attend unto my prayer? Hearing a prayer, we say all the time in that. To hear a prayer means something that I speak, and I want Hashem to hear it. Whether I speak it softly, but that's something you say out loud. A tefillah, something I say. Dear Hashem, please, blah, 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 blah. That's called Shema, listen to me. Hakshiva of is means to hear the unspoken prayers. Don't just hear what I say. Hakshiva. Hakshiva means to hear what it is that I'm not saying. So hear not only what I'm saying, but hear what I'm not saying. Hakshiva is to hear the part that I'm not saying, the unspoken part. So David HaMelech says in the Shema, I want you to hear two things. Hear what I speak, and hear what's in my heart. And verse Gimel in Pasuk 3, he says, Mikzei Aretz, from the end of the earth, Elecha Akra, I'll call you, V'atov Libi, when my heart is faint, V'tsur Yari Mimeni Lancheni, and you will, and lead me to a rock that is too high for me in a high place. So these are a little bit hard words to understand, so let's see what David HaMelech is saying. Mikzei Aretz, from the far ends of the earth, I will call unto thee. When David sent armies off to fight wars, he has to stay behind often. And this bothers him tremendously. Because he's sending people off to war, and he can't just pick up the phone and see how it's going. Right? He wants to be there with them. In fact, in his old age, Chazal tell us, as his reign near towards the end, the army made him promise not to go out anymore. Because they were afraid something would happen to him. And he didn't like to sit while the army's going out. It made him very uncomfortable. So therefore he's saying, from the end of the earth I'll call you. My people are everywhere. Now, the Radak brings another meaning. What does it mean to call you from the ends of the earth? If you recall, David had to flee Shaul HaMelech, and at one time he had to even flee to the land of the Plishtim. Of all the places to go, the land of the Plishtim is not a place to have to be forced to. Plishtim with enemies of Klal Yisrael. And for David to have to be forced to the Plishtim, he's saying, Mikzei Aretz, even from the end of the earth, I'll still call to thee. No matter how far I have to go, even if I'm chased all the way to the land of the Plishtim, I'll still call unto thee. There's a Medrash that adds a little bit deeper meaning to this verse, that I'll call thee from the end of the earth, I'll call unto thee. The Medrash says like this, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and Klal Yisrael was in exile, and in Galus, The Jews called out to Hashem and said, Mikzei Aretz Elecha Ikra, I'm calling you from the ends of the earth. And Hashem said, so why didn't you call me while you were still there? From the ends of the earth you'll call me. But maybe you should have called me while you were still in Eretz Yisrael. And the Medrash is making a very, very, very point. Mikzei Aretz Elecha, from the ends of the earth I'll call you. And what about from right here? Now, there's a saying in the army, they used to say, there's no atheist in a foxhole. When a person is under the gun, boy, that davening just pours right out there. But from the ends of the earth, Hashem says, you'll call. But when you're not at the ends of the earth and you're just going about your regular business, don't forget to call then. So the simple meaning is that David HaMelech is calling from wherever he is, whether it's the land of the Plishtim, whether it's the land of Arab, no matter how far it is, David HaMelech is calling. The Medrash brings a little bit deeper sort of allegorical meaning that a person should call not only from the ends of the earth, but from everywhere else as well. Now, he says that, and then I want, lead me to a rock that is too high for me. So a rock that's too high for me, the Mefarshim disagree whether that means to bring me back to Eretz Yisrael, or whether it just means to conquer his enemies. Meaning that it's too high for me. I can't conquer enemies by myself. Only with Hashem's help can I conquer enemies. You have to take me to a place that's too high for just little me as a person to do myself. Or some people say, no, bringing me back to a place too high for me, even though I don't deserve it, I want to successfully come back to Eretz Yisrael. So either way, David HaMelech is asking that he needs Hashem's help to successfully complete the task and to successfully conquer the enemy that he's fighting against and to return to Eretz Yisrael. Ki hayisi machsili, for you've been a refuge for me. Migdal oz mipnei oyev, you've been a tower of strength in the faith of my enemy. David HaMelech is adding a little twist. Ki hayisa machsili, you've always been a refuge in the past. Don't stop now. Because if you stop now, what will people say? Oh yes, their God doesn't help them. It'll be a desecration of your name and an embarrassment of your name if you stop now. Ki hayisa machsili, you always helped in the past. You see, once again, that relationship between David HaMelech and Hashem of like a father and a son. This isn't a tefillah that a Talmud makes of a Rebbe. This isn't a tefillah that Moshe Rabbeinu makes. This is a tefillah that a son makes. Don't stop helping me now. You've always helped me every time I've been in trouble before. Don't stop now. It almost sounds like something that a child would say to a parent. In the next verse, in Pasuk 5, it says, Agura Be'olcha, I will dwell in thy tent forever. I love me forever. Echsa b'seser k'adafech v'sela. And I'll take refuge in the cover of thy wings. Sela. So now David HaMelech is going to start asking for specifically what he wants here. He wants to dwell in the tents forever. Now the tents, literally in David HaMelech's time, they didn't have the Beis HaMikdash yet. So we'd be talking about the Mishkan. But when David HaMelech is referring to the Mishkan, he's referring to the Mishkan and the subsequent Beis HaMikdash that will come after it. So when he says that, I'd like to dwell in your tent, so the Beis HaMikdash hasn't been built yet, but there is a Mishkan. Yes. And the Mishkan is not in Yerushalayim. Right? The Mishkan at this time, I think, was in Shiloh, the time he's writing this. I will take refuge in your wings. I'm sorry, I'll dwell in the tent forever. So forever refers not only to this world, but to Olam Haba also. He wants to dwell in the closest to Hashem in this world and in the next. Now why does he need to add that? Does he think that he's not going to merit Olam Haba? He wants to dwell forever? You know, people sometimes daven for things, and they want to receive a reward in this world. So Hashem says, okay, I'll borrow against your account. I'll borrow against your account in Olam Haba, and I'll dispense some of your reward in this world. Person arrives to Olam Haba, and Olam Haba is forever. Now, forever is a long time, without meaning to sound right. And they realize, wow, I just traded part of forever. So David HaMelech is saying, I want to dwell in my tent, and forever. I want this reward now in this world, and I want the reward in the next world. And I'll take refuge in the cover of your wings. The Gemara says that David HaMelech I'm sorry, the Gemara says that Hashem took an oath, a shavua, and he swore to David HaMelech in response to this pasuk. David HaMelech says, forever, I don't want to leave you. And Hashem swore to him and took an oath that even after David was gone, his name would always be associated with Hashem's house, the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says that we still say, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam, and the reason we say that is because of this verse here. That David HaMelech asked Hashem, I want to dwell with you forever, in this world, in the next, in your Mishkan. And Hashem took an oath to David saying, okay, no matter what, even after you've passed away, the Beis HaMikdash will always be associated with your name. It's little kids, they say, like, David Melech, Yisrael. They're saying is something incredible. Saying Hashem says, you know what? He granted him his request to live forever. David Melech says, I want to be with you forever. I want to be in your Beis HaMikdash forever. And Hashem said, okay, I swear to you by my own name that the Beis HaMikdash will always be yours. In the next verse, in verse 6, how are the simple request? I want to dwell with you forever. And because of this request, it's David's Beis HaMikdash forever. But that doesn't, is not a testimony to the power of tefillah. I don't know what is. Agur be'olech olam, I want to live in your Mishkan, your Beis HaMikdash forever. So Hashem swore that it will always be your Beis HaMikdash. In verse 6, in Pasuk Vav, David HaMelech says, Kiyat Elokim, for you Hashem, Shemata Lenadarai, you've heard the vows that I've taken. Nasata Yerushas, and you've granted an inheritance, Yirei Shemecha, to those that fear your name. David HaMelech, during the course of his life, made a number of oaths. For example, when he was being pursued by Shaul, he made an oath that he would do various things if he was saved. He made an oath that he would not rest until he discovered the proper place for the Beis HaMikdash. And he made a number of other oaths, not all of which we know what they are, that if Hashem will save me, I will do X and I will do Y. So he says, Shemati Lendora, you've heard my oaths, right? And I will uphold all of my oaths. And David HaMelech upheld every oath that he made. I think a number of kapitulat ago, we learned about the incident where Shaul first surrounded David's house, and Michal helped him escape. I don't know if Tom Newfamily was here for that particular shiur or not. But Shaul had the house surrounded, and said in the morning, kill David, and Michal helped him climb out a window. And he escaped. And we talked about what happened the next morning. What we didn't talk about was what happened during the night. Where did David HaMelech go? They went to the house of Shmuel HaNavi, and together they determined where the Beis HaMikdash should be. David HaMelech fulfilled every vow that he took, no matter how difficult or how arduous it was. So he says to Hashem, you've heard all my vows, and you've seen that I fulfill them. Now, the Mefarshim all say, you know what? We make a lot of vows too. If Hashem will save me, I'll do this. If only this, I promise to do this. Are we as careful to fulfill those promises as David HaMelech was? And they say that Klal Yisrael itself makes a lot of promises when they're in exile. We want to return. We want to not be oppressed. We will serve you to the utmost, Hashem. The importance of upholding those oaths is illustrated here by David HaMelech, the lengths that he went to in order to uphold every oath that he made. It says, you've granted the heritage of those that fear you. So the heritage that was granted is either the Beis HaMikdash or Eretz Yisrael. It's not clear from the verse whether he means the Yerusha that you've given to those who fear Hashem, meaning the land of Israel, or meaning the Beis HaMikdash. It's not clear. One of those two things is what he's referring to. Well, I suppose possibly both, but unfortunately we're not clear whether or not he means you gave as an inheritance Eretz Yisrael, or you gave as an inheritance the Beis HaMikdash. Because previously, in the previous verse, usually the Yerusha is referring to Eretz Yisrael, but since the previous verse he's referring to the Beis HaMikdash, some of the Forshim say it's like a continuation of the previous verse, and really he's speaking still about the Beis HaMikdash. Other of the Forshim say, no, usually the Yerusha you mentioned, the inheritance for the Jewish people, is the land of Israel. And he goes on to verse 7, and he says, Yamim al Yimei Melech Tosif, add days unto the days of kings. And Shenoisav Kimodor Vador, and may his years be as many generations. So now, since I'm a king, we want lots and lots of added days onto the reign of the king. Sounds sort of like a selfish request on first glance. Since I'm the king,
you know, you better make me live a long time because I have a lot of kingly jobs to do. Chazal tell us in the Gemara, kings die young, almost always. The Gemara says the job buries them. Now, we've seen that ourselves in the little bit that we've learned now, that the job of being a king, especially trying to be a righteous king, is a job almost too big for one person. And Chazal say the job buries them. And Chazal take us through the history of Nach and show us there was no Navi that did not outlive at least four kings. Every single Navi in the history of Nach outlived at least four kings. Chazal say that the job buries it. The David HaMelech says, you know what? I'm not asking for anything special from other people. Just even though I have this job, let me at least live a normal lifespan. Let me live 70 years or so. All right? Don't let the job bury me, is what David HaMelech is asking. Remember, we saw Shaul before him, and we'll see many Malachim later. The job is going to bury them. All right? And David HaMelech knows that. He says, you know what? Don't let the job bury me. He's not asking for a selfish request. I want to live a long time. He's saying, you know what? Add days unto the days of me as a king. Because I'm a king, I know that is it. And all of the trouble and all of the dissension, everything always centers on the king. Don't let that happen to me. May the years be like generations. Let me live like everybody else lives. Yeshev Olam. I want to sit, Livnei Elohim, forever in front of Hashem, Chesed Ve'emes, with Chesed and with Emes, Man Yitzruhu, and may they preserve him. He wants to sit forever. The English here says may be enthroned before God forever. I don't think you have to translate it quite that fancily. Yeshev Olam is to sit forever. He wants to sit forever. Now, most of the Mefarshim say he's talking about himself. There are some Mefarshim that say he's talking about Mashiach, sitting forever. Right? But either way, sitting forever is an allusion to the fact that there's only one person who can sit down in the Beis HaMikdash. And that is a king that is descended from David HaMelech. For anyone else to sit down in the Beis HaMikdash is a capital offense. Now let's try and picture the crowds that would be at the Beis HaMikdash, for example, on a Yom Tov, where everybody is Ola Regal and comes up to the Beis HaMikdash. We're talking about hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people coming to and from and in and out of the Beis HaMikdash. We're talking about Kohanim by the droves performing massive amounts of shechting, and it's a huge operation here. Only one person can sit down. It's been a long day here. Can't sit down. Only one person can sit down on the Beis HaMikdash. Says David HaMelech, you know what? I just want to sit down. That's all I want. And sit there. For the stuff of being a king, is not an easy job. There are a lot of affairs of state. There are a lot of difficulties. There's a lot of dissensions. David HaMelech, I have a simple request. Yeshev Olam, I just want to sit down and stay close to Hashem forever. And Lifnei Elokim and sit in front of Hashem with Chesed and Emes and learn. And try and pursue wisdom and become a better person. Right? Remember, David HaMelech, until he was 21, worked on becoming a more spiritual individual, unencumbered by being a Melech. So David HaMelech is a little bit yearning for the fact that he just wants to sit and work on becoming a more spiritual person again and in learning more. He wants to just do that forever. That's all he wants to do, it's like. Kindness and truth, chesed of emes, use these things, guard me from all these things that take away, from wars, from foes, from distractions. That's all I want to do. I have a simple request. And he says, and you know what? Kein azamra shimcha la'ad. And I'll sing praises unto Hashem forever. L'shalma nidarei yayim yay. And I'll sing fresh praises, he's talking about. Every day, I'll sing another new praise to Hashem. And then, in l'shalma and in peace, Nidorai, I can fulfill all my vows and my goals, yom yom, every day. And that's the end of the kapitza. David HaMelech is feeling isolated and cut off for whatever the reason may be. And he says, you know what? Don't let the job bury me. I just want to sit and I want to become close to Hashem. That's all I want to do, become a better person. Right? Learn more. Become wiser. Understand more the ways of the world. Don't let all these things interfere with that. It's the voice of a lonely individual. Now, Rabbi Rubin, in his book, which I've recommended before, has a very good way with words. He says that life is a battle, and he calls it between two forces. He calls it one force the happy place, and one force the miserable place. I think we would call them optimism and pessimism. He calls them, in quotes, your happy place and your sad place. He says people have little voices that speak to you. They speak to you from the happy place, and they speak to you from the sad place. So we tend to think that these are really different things. When a person is sad, they're asking Hashem for one thing, and when they're happy, they're asking Hashem for different things. We're looking at these as different kinds of reactions and different kind of emotions that a person has. What is the point of this kapitel here? I think the point of this kapitel, if I might suggest, is that really all the different emotional responses a person has, whether they're coming from the happy place of, wow, I can do anything today, or whether they're coming from the sad place where one has had a day like David HaMelech has had that would try the patience of most men, that it's really the same thing. It's the neshama giving a big kvetch. What do I mean by that? Recently, as I've gotten older, I noticed that when I stand up, sit down, or lay down, I make these little noises. It happened to be the exact same noises that my father, Aleph Shalom, made. And I thought that was something a very old person would do. I now realize it's something that a quite young person would do. Not even a middle-aged person. But you know, when I get up, my knees, they make this little funny sound. I'm sure nobody here can relate to this, but ask your parents, right? And they'll tell you that, you know, when I get up, and I stretch my back, and I sound like my legs are popping, all right, and I make this oi noise, and my kids look at me like, my gosh, you're falling apart. One of my kids told me, I think that your parts are getting rusty. Mm-hmm. And my rusty parts, you know, you get up, you moan, you wish, what do you say to yourself? Do you say, you know what, my knee just made a funny sound. I'm going to dive into Hashem that the next time I get up, the cartilage should stretch at the appropriate angle so that the muscle and the tendon will snap back at the proper reflex so that when I get up, the joint will be able to have enough liquid motion in it so that it'll come out at the proper angle, and instead of making that pop, will be able to give me a fully extended reflex without any pain whatsoever. How many people say that? And so they say, oh yeah, I wish my knee wouldn't do that. Well, it's not really what you want. Really what you want is all that complicated thing that I just described, right? You don't ask for a whole medical description. You ask for a simple request. It's so simple that it's almost like a childlike request. I wish my knee wouldn't hurt when I get up. It's not really what you want. Really what you want is this whole complicated thing that would have to happen for your knees not to hurt. You know, a person's neshama is a lot like old knees. In that, the neshama has simple requests. The neshama says, you know what? Just forget life's complications. It doesn't matter whether you're the happy place or whether you're the sad place. All the neshama wants is a simple request. I want my knees to work, is your request. And the neshama's request, I just want to sit in the Shem, with the Shem, in the Beis HaMikdash. And I just want to learn. I just want to be a better person. No complicated explanations. No roundabout logic, no need to know how the cartilage of the neshama works and whether we want, well, you know what, if I were to learn 16 more minutes every day, get up 40 minutes earlier and daven 3 extra pesukim, then I think that I could ask Hashem, because Hashem says, oi! Making a big oi when you get up. Forget all that. Just ask Hashem if we could maybe, like, get a little better. David HaMelech is saying in this kapitel that it's okay to daven with a simple kvetch. People think davening is a big, complicated thing. You have to enumerate what you want. It's the equivalent of the cartilage. Right? When I get up and my back makes these popping noises, I don't really know the whole details. I don't daven, you know, what I wish the next time I go to the chiropractor, he'd really do an adjustment on the third joint so that he can press it. I don't know. I just give a big fight and say, I wish my back didn't hurt. So Stefan HaMelech, Ruchnias and the Shama can work the same way. First, you get up and just, you're just, oh, it just gives a, can give a kvetch and says, I wish I could just sit close to Hashem and not have to deal with this. People think that's not an okay way to daven. Says David HaMelech, I'm the Melech of Klal Yisrael. I've got armies all over right now fighting in terrible danger. I look out with Ruach HaKodesh and I see that Klal Yisrael is destined to be in Gullus and to go through horrible, horrible things. So you would think that what we're going to get is a great big long kapitel, full of elaborate tefillahs. When I opened this kapitel, I was expecting to see 30, 40, 50 pesukim. There are 9 pesukim. And 4 or 5 are sort of an introduction. The Hanuma says, you know what? That's not what you... My neshama, just give me vajra. Hashem, just give me the ability to sit, to live a good life, and to sit and become closer to you. That's the lesson of the kapitel. It's okay for the neshama to give a kvetch, and that's a way to daven. Daven doesn't always have to be such an elaborate cheshbon, such an elaborate accounting of all the things we want to do. Many people say, you know what? Oh, you know what I'm going to do? Later tonight, kids are in bed, everything's done, I'm going to really sit down and daven well. Tomorrow morning, I'm sending the kids off to school, I'm going to, you know what? When you get up from the couch, do you say, knees, wait, you can't pop until all the kids are in bed? No, because it's a reflexive thing. So David Amal says, you know what? Tefillah can be a reflexive thing also. It's okay that you're Shabbat, you give a kvetch. I wish things could be simpler. I wish things could be better, Hashem. I wish I had more time to plan the elaborate davening that I wanted to plan. I wish I had more time for this. I wish Hashem make it easier for this. I wish Hashem wouldn't distract me with all of the problems of the world. It's okay. It's a simple thing. A few psuki. Says David HaMelech, that's as powerful as a tefillah as the most elaborate and complex 3-hour-long tehillim gatherings. David HaMelech said one request. I want to live. I want to dwell in your tent forever. And because of that, Hashem took an oath that it would always be David's Beis HaMikdash. 3 words he said. So far, I mean, David HaMelech says a lot of words. Right? These 3 words he said, it's a simple kafetch, straight from the neshama. He meant it, and he said, Agur Abel, I just want to dwell with you forever, Hashem. Does that seem like a massively powerful tefillah? Does that seem like something that will go down in the annals of history as the tefillah par excellence that resulted in the saving of the Jewish people? It is. Because he said it with a simple touch from the neshama. And that, I think, is the lesson of this particular kapitel. That it doesn't have to be elaborate, it doesn't have to be fancy, and it doesn't even have to be detailed. It just has to come reflexively from your neshama. Open up to the fact of the response to anything is to ask Hashem. You get up, your knees pop. You know, they say that in Europe, what differentiates Europe from America? In Europe, if a woman's bread didn't rise properly in the oven, she asked Hashem to help fix it. Now, how does that differentiate Europe from America? People bake bread in America. My wife happens to make a tremendously good bread. And she never even lived in Europe. So what does it mean that in Europe, they asked Hashem to fix their bread? In Europe, for whatever else Europe was, all right? We're not going to have a whole discussion now about all the ramifications of Europe. But in Europe, ask someone who lived in Europe at the height, you know, of the Jewish yeshuv before the war, and they'll tell you that we talk to Hashem all the time. It was like a reflexive thing. Oy, my bread fell. Oy, Hashem, help my bread. How many people today do that? My bread fell. I'll work on it. Oh, tomorrow at 8:30, I have davening. That's when I'm going to talk to Hashem. Says David HaMelech, no, Agur Abel Echol, I want to sit with Hashem forever. Your bread falls, talk to Hashem. Davening doesn't have to be a whole fancy thing. Davening is just a reflexive speaking to Hashem. The same way that you can't help your knees popping and your back popping as you get older, your neshama should be growing also. So that your neshama automatically speaks to Hashem. Oy, my bread fell, Hashem. Oy, Hashem, help me with this. I used to have a teacher in yeshiva who survived the war, an older fellow. And it's a very interesting story. He taught Torah for many years. He only passed away about 10 years ago. He never took any money for it. Because he said that in his town, the Nazis gathered everybody together. The Nazis, Machshbam, gathered everybody together. They put him in a big field. And they brought helicopters in and they mowed them all down with machines. So there were thousands and thousands of people that could have been there. 2 people got up and survived, and he was one of them. And he said he was always bothered by the war. Why did he survive? Why? He said there were tremendous people in there, people that were Talmid HaChachami, people that he would have thought would easily survive over here. It must be that he had something he was supposed to give. So he taught Torah his whole life, I never took any money for it. He used to say that whenever he would be teaching, and you know, as he got older, sometimes he would forget the words a little bit, you know, even though, you know, I think he was already into his 80s or 90s, and I'm not there, and I can't remember half the time my own phone number, but sometimes when he would stretch for a word, he would automatically say, Hashem Yazar. It's automatic that he would ask, Hashem will help. Hashem, help me. Right? It wasn't a big tefillah. That was like an automatic thing. I can't remember what page we're on. Hashem Yazar 32. That was just part of his daily life, his conversation to Hashem. We don't have that now. That's what it means when it says that Europe, people asked, talk to Hashem when they were making their bread, and their bread fell. So it's David HaMelech, you got to get to that. You got to get to the point where you're like this fellow who was teaching Torah, and you're like the woman who was baking bread, but something happens, your neshama pops. Like your knees pop, and it automatically is, oh, Hashem, help. That's tefillah. That's David HaMelech's tefillah that came from there, that resulted in the fact that it's always David's Beis HaMikdash. Why should it be David's Beis HaMikdash? He didn't even build the thing. Okay, he got everything ready, and it was in his merit. But okay, let's call it David Veshlomo's Beis HaMikdash. I mean, the building was hard work, right? To get some credit, we don't even mention Shlomo HaMelech. David's Beis HaMikdash, because his neshama gave that kvetch, help with my bread, help with the Beis HaMikdash, help me remember what page we're on. That's the lesson of this kapitel. This Hashem, as a person gets older, he can bring his neshama to that point, says David HaMelech, has a tremendous smile. It's more than all of the complicated tefillahs. This is a tefillah with David HaMelech is saying when he's at his most lonely, and his most isolated, and his most feeling cut off from everything. Help Hashem. Any questions? Next week, Bez Hashem, we'll be doing 62. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the topic is Lean on Me. And it will be again at 8 o'clock. Thank you.